Now, once again, here's Mark.
Well, good morning, everybody. 4 minutes after the hour of 10 o'clock. My name is Mark Salem, and for the next couple of hours, if you're going to tune in right here at KKNT 960 AM, then we can talk cars, and you're welcome to join us. It's easy. You give us a call, 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960, and you'll talk to Gil. He'll ask you your name. He'll put you on hold. He'll talk to me in my headset and say, Sarah's on next, and I'll call Sarah up as soon as I get to that particular point. So we're talking about cars. Anything you want to know about car repair, I can either send you to somebody who's better than I am, or I can answer your question. But it works best when we have some kind of format. And the format would be, I have this year, make, and model a car, and I have this many miles. And when I do this, it does this. Or it doesn't start, so then I'm going to ask you, does it click and not crank? Or does it go and not catch? So those are different words that we use to try to identify what the symptoms are and what the problem is and stuff like that. Because when you say your car doesn't start, that means so much to a guy like me who's been working on cars since the late 60s. Not start doesn't mean, does it crank over and doesn't catch? It doesn't run? And a lot of times when people say it doesn't start, that means nothing happens when you hit the key. Well, if it's cranking over and it goes, yeah, but it doesn't catch and run, then it's spark or fuel problem. So we need spark and fuel, and we need that motor to rotate, and we need it all in timing. And boom, it starts right up. But if you hit the key and nothing happens, then we have a battery starter problem. So when you say my car doesn't start, it can be a battery problem, a starter problem, a connection problem, or if it cranks but doesn't catch, it can be fuel supply, fuel pump, plugged fuel filter, or some kind of a sensor, a predominant sensor, a sensor that's really necessary, that's not talking to the computer anymore. So those are the kinds of things I can walk you through, but you're welcome to join us, 602-508-0960. I have a list of the best car repair shops, and I've had that list since 1988 here in Phoenix. It's a list that's important to me because that's the number one question I kind of field. Hi, Mark, where's your shop? My response is where do you live? I'll guide you to a shop in your geographical area that's really good. Because there's no way one shop can handle the volume that we're likely to create. And it's not anything that I think serves me best anyway. So it's the idea is get you close to a shop that's in your geographical neighborhood. So if you're in Mesa, I've had a lot of shops apply over the years for all kinds of areas in the Phoenix and the Valley area. But in Mesa, only one's passed the muster. Thompson's Auto Repair has been around since 1970. Brian and Thelma come from two families that got their start in the 50s and 60s and 70s in gas stations with bays working on cars. So both of them have been around cars and grease, and they've had that kind of dinner conversation around the table since they were young. Nevertheless, they have ASE certified technicians, and ASE is the Automotive Service Excellence Group. It's a national organization, and you take one of eight tests or all eight tests. And if you pass the electrical test, that means you're ASE certified in electrical issues with the car. If you pass all eight tests, you're a master. And I've been a master since 1991, and I was first certified 6 years before that. So I think I took a drivability test and an electrical test, and I passed those. And then ultimately I ended up taking all eight tests and becoming a master in 1991. So, and then you have to recertify every 5 years until you retire. So that's kind of what happens. But Thompson's Auto Repair is on Main Street just east of Stapley. It's a good place to go. It's a good place to, if you don't have a repair shop in Mesa, then I would suggest you go there. 602-508-0960. If you're into, my shop has lots of 55-gallon drums, and most of them are in pristine shape, but they no longer have a core charge on them. So we take these, and they have oils and solvents and brake fluid and brake clean and stuff like that inside of them, and we clean them all out. So what we do is we sell them as trash cans. So with a 55-gallon drum, typically what people want is for me to cut the lid off, and then they want handles on the side. Now, we don't put handles on the side that have little bitty metal screws in them. We put quarter-inch bolts on the handles, and the handles are really strong, so a person can get on either side of the drum and pick it up. If you're interested in that kind of a 55-gallon drum, you can tell me whether you want to buy just the drum or if you want me to cut the lid off of it and if you want me to put handles on it. But just send me an email, mark at marksalem.com. Mark at marksalem.com. Mark is M-A-R-K. Salem is like the cigarette, S-A-L-E-M, marksalem.com. So anyway, when we talk about cars, one of the big things that we always talk about is different expectations of consumers and then different responses to those expectations from the shops. And what we have to really kind of look for with respect to the shop is motivation. And some of the things that are going on right now in the car repair industry, I'll share with you. It's no secret. The cars of today need far less maintenance than the cars of yesterday. In the 70s and the 80s and the 90s and even up to the 2000 mark, we had your car in every 3,000 miles, if you got it in at 3,000 miles, and many of you went 4 and 5 and 6 and 7, it's okay. It's your car. But we did 3,000-mile oil changes. Today, I don't think that there's been a car made in the last 15 years that doesn't have north of 7,000, 8,000, 9,000-mile oil changes. Many of the cars today are using a far superior oil, so the conventional was the 3,000 to 5,000-mile oil. It's good and provides good protection between 3 and 5,000 miles. Semi-synthetic goes from 5,000 to 7,500 or 8. So a semi-synthetic is supposed to be half synthetic and half conventional. Synthetic is, of course, the big dog. And then you got synthetic oil, and that starts at about 8,000 and goes to 15,000, depending on what the car maker says. Now, synthetic oil is a far superior oil in every way, shape, or form. It won't turn to a solid until 500 degrees. So if you decide to drive your car home and the motor gets red hot, the engine will fail, but not because the oil failed. And the engine will fail because you overheated it and melted the motor. But in reality, that just gives you a visual that synthetic oil can handle heat and much better than any other oil out there. And all the major brands have a synthetic oil. And then On the cold side, a conventional oil probably won't pour out of the can at about 20 degrees. It'll be waxy, and it'll be like the worst maple syrup you've seen. Synthetic oil will pour out of the can like water at 60 below zero. So you can see the difference. Synthetic oil on the high side, it turns to a tar at 500 degrees. Your motor is a piece of junk at 250, 260, 270, maybe 300. So again, the oil is fine up to 500 degrees Fahrenheit. Your engine is not at 300. Anything more than 300, your motor is going to motor heaven. And that's typically where the driver, is the one that makes the decision that I've only got another mile or two, and I know the red light's on saying I'm overheating, I know steam's coming from underneath the hood, but I know I can make it home. That's what we hear right before we give them an estimate for thousands and thousands of dollars to replace their engine. The tow truck is so much cheaper, just so much cheaper. So if the red light comes on that says oil or the red light says overheat, please just throw it in neutral, turn on your hazards, get off the road, get on your cell phone, call a tow truck, take it to your shop. 602-508-0960 is the phone number, 602-508-0960. You're welcome to call in. Any kind of question, I'm especially good with arguments between husbands and wives about what should I do about this or when should I do that, that kind of stuff. Today, in the old days, in the 70s and the 80s, let's go to the 60s and the 70s, the cars would barely make 3,000 miles on an oil change because they would use oil. And so you had to add oil in the 3,000 miles. They were Fred Flintstone cars compared to today. They were akin to the telephone with two tomato cans and a piece of wire between them. In 1981, we came up with a carburetor with an electronic mixture control solenoid which would then meter the flow of gasoline to the engine. And that was something that we never had before. We had a carburetor, and it just had everything to do with your foot. Wherever your foot was, we would deliver that gasoline the best we could to that specific area. So if your foot was on the floor, we'd give you all the gas in the air we could give you. But with a mixture control solenoid, that along with an oxygen sensor, we can now control based on what's coming out of the tailpipe. What's coming out of the tailpipe tells us what to do up front. So if there's a whole bunch of fuel coming out of the tailpipe, whether it's raw or unburnt fuel, we'll just turn the nozzle down underneath the hood. And then the O2 sensor says, a little bit more, perfect, right there. That's how it works. Except it happens hundreds, if not a thousand times a second. So the computer just takes over. So 1981, we had a mixture control solenoid. We went really big time into fuel injection in the late 80s, and not big, but and then in the 90s, for sure, we hit fuel injection hard. And then today we have cars with no distributors. We have fuel injection. We have everything that to do with the engine is automated. And that's the reason why today that the only time we replace a motor or fix a motor is when you overheat it, run it low on oil. Because if you don't overheat it, don't run it low on oil, your engine, and you properly change the oil, your engine will last 300,000 or 400,000 miles. Easy. 300,000 or 400,000 miles. We have cars on the road in the fleet that I'm responsible for of my customers of north of 500,000 miles, and they're not leaking or using any oil yet. Yes, they've been maintained, but it's not going to benefit you to over maintain your car. You see, your car's not going to love you if you change your oil every 2,000 miles instead of 3, or every 6,000 miles instead of 9. The car's not going to love you. It's going to fail. It has a clock spring on it, just like everything else. It's going to fail July 24th, 2041. If that's the day it's going to die, it's going to die. There's nothing you can do about it. So the car is just basically, it's kind of like a horse, and you can overfeed it. That doesn't do any good. But if you just keep it warm in the winter, keep it cool in the summer, exercise it regularly every day, and feed it good food, it'll be fine. 602-508-0960. Well, thank you for spending your weekend with me for the next hour and what is it, 40 minutes. We're going to talk about cars, and you're welcome to join us. If you have a car question, if you have a car, maybe somebody gave you an estimate and they're telling you you need to do something and you're unclear about it, or you want to discuss it, I'm pretty good at all that kind of stuff. So you're welcome to join me. We have 5 lines available, 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. And this portion of Under the Hood is brought to you by Kurtz Auto Repair. I've known Kurtz for, I don't know how many years, a decade or more. Kurt's a really good guy. He has a really good staff. It's a family-owned and operated repair shop. They're on the northeast corner of Bell Road and I-17, and he has ASE-certified technicians. Kurt knows right from wrong, and he knows that he can work on domestic and import both gas and diesel engines. So he's got pretty much everything covered. You just have to meet the staff or meet Kurt before you can understand how really excited I am that he's part of our group. And he also does a really great job. It's really nice for me to get lots of nice calls about the shops I refer you to, about how they pulled a rabbit out of their hat, as one guy said, or they fixed something that nobody else could, or they told a person, you don't need this, in our opinion, after the person had been told they do. So those are the kind of tiebreaker things. Kurtz Auto Repair, I-17 and Bell, he's a good guy. When it comes to car repair, you can over-maintain your car. And if you get some kind of self-assurance with that, if you feel like your car's going to love you, that's fine. No, you know, I don't think any of the shops care. Although we'd like to have all of our customers to do that. What's important to understand is that everything is based off oil changes. Today is not like it was 100 years ago or 50 years ago or 30 years ago. Today is different. We have cars that will go all year long on the same oil, if they're under somewhere in the vicinity of 15,000 miles a year or less. The real problem is those customers of mine in Ahwatukee and Mountain Park Ranch area who drive 5,000 miles a year. Now, they have an oil that's good for 12,000 to 15,000 miles. So should I take them? And if they drive 5,000 miles a year, should I wait 2 years to change their oil? I tell them I'd rather not, and here's why. First of all, I'm not going to put the real expensive oil in there because I don't need the real expensive oil in order to provide the protection for 5,000 miles a year. So I'm not going to put $150 synthetic. I'm going to use a $45 or $50 conventional oil. I say to them, bring your car in once a year, preferably at the beginning of the summer. Then I'm going to change the oil, and with the oil change, and this is universal, this is what our industry says. We're supposed to check all the fluids, the belts, and the hoses. We're supposed to check the tires, and we're supposed to look for stuff that may need repair now or will be needing replacement or repair in the future. We're not capable of looking at your car and knowing what's going to happen to it day after tomorrow. Unless, of course, there's a huge egg on the tread of the tire. That's creating a vibration that you had to have felt and you had to have seen your steering wheel jerking all over the place. And those are the kinds of things that we find during a normal inspection on the oil change. So some of you, like the, let's talk about the 5,000 mile a year people. Conventional oil, I bring them in once a year. I like to see them in April or May so that they can go through the summer with fresh oil. You look the car over, and this is what you're supposed to do. You're supposed to look at the car and say to yourself, what won't make it for a year? What won't make it? That's all. We're not expected to look into the future and know that the alternator is going to fail in October. We don't know that. Neither does the driver. It just happens. But the idea is you can over-maintain your vehicle, but if you change your oil once a month, every year of the car's life, it's not going to love you anymore, because even though it has a brain, the brain doesn't have love as part of it. The brain is controlling the spark and the fuel and the vehicle emissions and the transmission shift points and the air conditioning and the climate controls and the windshield wipers and all that other stuff. But the brain inside your car doesn't have emotion in it. So like I said, don't over-maintain your car, but don't under-maintain your car. And if you want to know what the maintenance record is for your car, open up your owner's manual. And that will tell you. It's easy to describe in this kind of fashion. By the way, the phone lines are open, 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. Lines are wide open. You're welcome to call us and ask a car question. The conventional oil is 3,000 to 5,000 mile interval. Then a semi-synthetic is 5 to about 8,000 miles. And then you've got synthetic that goes from 8 or 10 all the way up to 15,000 miles. Here's what's going on in our industry that I've seen myself. We're doing a premium oil change for between $90 and $150, but we're bringing you back in at 3,000 miles. The sin there is that that oil is good for 10 to 15,000 miles. We're selling it to you as a premium oil change, but we're bringing you back in at 3,000 miles, so we're taking the oil out of it when the oil just started getting its legs. We're supposed to leave that oil in there and put on your door sticker or your window sticker to call you back between 10 and 15,000 miles. We're supposed to do that. But the sin is, and it's fraud, it's buffaloing you, it's taking your money. I'm going to sell you and charge you for a premium oil change, but I'm not going to really let you have the benefit of the longevity of this oil. I'm going to call you back in 3,000 miles. So if you're normal, you're going to come in 3-4 times a year. And in reality, that 3 or 4 times a year is going to cost a lot of money, because one synthetic oil change for that whole year would have been $140. $100 to $140. So I can bring you, I don't have to change your oil, but once a year, if I put a full-blown synthetic oil in it, but that oil is going to be expensive, and I'd say $100 to $140 is because I want to cover all the bases of all the different kinds of shops that are billing for that kind of stuff. A lot of most everybody's between $99 and $130. So I say $100 to $140. So
2 minutes.
The issue is that if we sell you a premium oil change and it's capable of going 8 to 10,000 miles, but we call you back in because we write on your door sticker, come back in 3,000 miles, or we look at your odometer says 30, and we write down that you need to have your oil changed at 33,000 miles. That happens. I've seen it in the last week. So I've seen those kinds of cars come into my shop, and I also seen friends of mine, because I have a bad habit of looking at the door stickers when I go. I went with a bunch of cowboys not too long ago to go wrestle some cows up, and I was looking at the door sticker on his pickup truck, and he was laughing at me. But the idea is that we need to, but when I talk about the worst of our industry, I'm talking about maybe 10 to 15%. I firmly believe that 80% of the shops in the Phoenix area really do have your best interest at heart. Most of them are going to be on my web list of best car repair shops at marksalem.com. I have nothing to sell you at marksalem.com other than information, and it's free. So you're welcome to go there and look through the FAQs, but you can also click on the best car repair shops list, and you can also see the cars that are in your geographical area, that you, or the shops that you might want to take a look at. Okay, we're here for another hour and a half. If you'd like to talk or ask a car question, or ladies, if you and your husband always have an argument, then you call up and you say, my husband and I always have an argument, and here's what the argument's about. You can tell me that what the two sides are, but you don't have to say, well, this is my side and this is his side, and then I'll pick a side and I'll explain why I picked that side. But if your shop has told you that you need to have your refrigerant replaced and that your car just turned 100,000 miles, that may be something we want to talk about. 602-508-0960. Well, 34 minutes after the hour of 10 o'clock. My name is Mark Salem. Every Saturday for 2 hours, we're here talking about cars, and we go from 10 to 12. We're going to talk real quick about automatic transmission exchange, and then we're going to talk to, to Cole and Jeff, so you stay right there. Anybody else? I have three lines open, 602-508-0960. One of the oldest transmission experts in this entire town is Livin at Automatic Transmission Exchange. Phil's been around since 1968, and he started with transmissions when they were really basic and fundamental, and now they've evolved into completely computer-operated. So we're going to control every aspect of the transmission with a computer, and Phil's already walked that path. So if you need any transmission repairs, all the way from a service to having somebody figure out what's the matter when the transmission skips second gear, then Automatic Transmission Exchange is located at 40th Street in Washington. They're good people. Phil's been around the world, around the block more than once. Cole, good morning. How can I help you?
Yes. Good morning. First of all, thanks for your show. I appreciate it, and I do enjoy it.
Thank you.
I have a 2000. You're welcome. I have a 2011 Ford F-150 5.0 liter Coyote engine, and last summer the valve, you know, when you step on the gas and right when you hit the gas, the valves would ping a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
So what I did when I did my oil change is I added a little bit of 30 weight during the summertime to help mitigate that going on. It seemed to help. Although I don't like mixing oils. But then this year, of course, you know, we started with a hot summer, and same thing was happening, obviously, when you start hitting the high temperatures. And instead of doing the 30 weight, I just added a little bit more oil in the oil change, maybe about a quarter quart, and it seemed to help out a lot. I'm just wondering what you think about that. I have one other note on it. I had a leak in my rear main seal in the back, and I've had it for probably a few months now. My neighbor said maybe I should change the PCB valve. Or valves on there that might help. It might have a little extra pressure in there pushing some oil out. But I know Fords, and they've always had that kind of, you know, after so many miles, the rear main seal seemed to start leaking a little bit. But I was, main reason I was calling is about the oil and the oil change, you know, that ping voice.
Okay. All right.
From the valve.
All right. You covered lots of ground. On your Ford, does this rattling noise occur no matter whether the truck's cold or hot? No matter hot day, air conditioning on, air conditioning, as soon as you tap the gas and to go take off from a red light, is that when you have this clatter?
Only when you just hit the gas right at the beginning when you get the gas and it gets that little bow ping. It's like, you know, and it's not so much when it's cold, but definitely when it's warm. So it is an issue with the what seems like the oil is the issue as far as not getting to certain valves or whatever.
Okay.
I have good oil pressure and everything, so I don't know. You know, I don't know if I'm. I don't want to be messing with oil changes as far as mixing oils. I like it's a 520 oil
okay.
that it's required, and I just put a little extra in it.
All right. I'm not familiar with what you're describing, though. This is one of those things that somebody's got to go for a ride with you and listen to the noise that you're talking about. We've fixed exhaust leaks that sound like a valve clatter. When I ask you if it happens all the time, you said yes, and I specifically was cold or hot. That means we're not pinging. So we don't have any pre-ignition going on here, because pre-ignition doesn't happen when the engine's cold. It happens when the engine's hot. And you changing the oil, I don't care that you put 30 weight in it, if you put can of STP in it or whatever. That's called a diagnostic process. If you think that there's a diagnostic process, and if you think this is oil related, then at your next oil change, put a half a pint of STP in there. It's not going to hurt it. It's a matter of diagnosing it. But if you come back and you go, I've tried five different oils, and I've done this, and I've done this, and I've done this, and nothing's changed it, then it's time to have somebody listen to it to find out if it's what you think it is. This could be an exhaust leak. We fixed exhaust leaks. So we need to kind of, I think the thing, what part of town do you live in?
I live up in Cave Creek.
Okay. I'd go over to, are you on the, what North and South Street are you close to?
Carefree and Cape Creek Road, Carefree Highway and Cape Creek Road.
Okay. Well, you can come down to Greenway and 40th Street, go to Blackwell's, and just say to him, Salem said you'll drive it. Call him and tell him you're coming. And Salem said you'll drive it. I'm going to show you, and then I'm going to let you do it. That's what needs to happen.
Right.
But that's where we have to kind of start, is we have to kind of start there. We have to figure out what the noise is, because obviously you haven't touched the noise by playing around with the oil, but the symptoms that you described don't sound like oil problems to me.
No, it did mitigate a little bit when I changed the oil. When I put 30 weight in, it definitely went much more, almost not quite silent, but almost. And then this year when I put the extra oil in, like a quarter quart, maybe a third, it definitely mitigated.
Okay, but
all
none
the
of that makes sense to me.
Cole,
stop. Yeah. None of that makes sense to me. So you're putting a little bit of 30 weight in it, and you're changing the viscosity of 5 quarts? That doesn't make sense. Cole, I'm sorry. I got to go. Cole, I'm just telling you. Somebody's got to listen to it. If it's a bad idea if you want us to fix your car through your eyes, because that's just not going to work. It doesn't work. It's not that you're not capable. It's just you don't have the experience that us gray-haired guys do. So if you want, go by Blackwell's, have him take a look at it, and all you're going to say is come with me. I'm going to show you what I'm talking about, and then I'm going to swap places with you, and I'm going to teach you how to make it happen. And that's the easiest way to handle it, and if he charges you a half an hour labor, then he'll tell you that. And please, Jeff, stay right there, because I'm going to get you on the other side of this break. Forty-three minutes after the hour of 10 o'clock, and just like I promised, we're going straight to Jeff. Jeff, good morning. How can I help you this morning?
Good morning to you. Just discovered your show today, so thank you for what you do.
You bet.
Have a 2010 Prius, Toyota Prius, with 220,000 used full synthetic. Had the hybrid battery fail a couple months ago, and I went ahead and replaced it. So I'd love to get another 200 out of this engine. But for the last 30,000 or so, it's been burning oil at the rate I add like a quart about every couple thousand miles.
Okay.
I guess the question is, should I just keep doing that? Should I look to replace the engine? What should I be thinking about to make this car go?
Okay. Are you seeing the blue smoke out of the tailpipe or not?
I don't believe so. I haven't actually checked that, but No, I haven't seen that.
All right. Throttle up hard sometimes and just look in your rearview mirror and see if you see anything. The question, if I was the guy in charge of your car service, I'd say, well, I need to know where the oil's going, or I want to know where the oil's going. So the easiest thing to do is pull the spark plugs and look at them. That'll tell you which cylinders. Now, you have 200,000 miles on it, so you've been around the world 9 times. You've been around the equator 9 times. So I'm thinking, it's okay. What oil are you putting in it now? What weight?
It's just a 0W20.
Okay.
Is that right?
And probably so, and that's a synthetic. So I probably would if you were my brother-in-law and I loved you, as opposed to my other brother-in-law, who I don't, I would say to you, first of all, let's pull the spark plugs and take a look at them, and that'll tell us which cylinder it is. number two, then let's go from a 0-20 and let's go to like a 10-30 semi-synthetic. We won't give you the annual oil changes that you have now, but let's step it up in thickness a little bit. And to be honest with you, I wouldn't have any problem with taking that Prius, taking it to a 2030 or a 2050, or even a straight 30 weight for just diagnosis purposes. If you said, Mark, I can go all oil change long if I put just straight 30 weight in it, I'm thinking to myself, 220,000 miles, there is no harm here. There is no harm here. It's not like that motor's tighter than heck, and it's not like that motor's brand new. So my point would be is hey, if you can go the whole oil change interval, 3, 5, 7,000 miles on a 30 weight, then do it. So that's okay. Kind of the process I would do. Okay?
Okay. Sounds great.
All right. Thank you very much. Bobby, you stay right there. I just got a little thing to talk about here. Is Harker's Automotive, 38th Avenue and Indian School. The guys that are on my list are seasoned guys. They all have gray hair. We all know what we're doing. We've all been around the block a few times. We've all been in business for many, many, many years. But Harker's stands ahead of a lot of other shops in the valley because of his diagnostic capabilities. He can fix things. He can find and fix things that other people struggle with. I just remember a car that had $2,000 estimate to fix something, and he went in and fixed it it was $150. And it had to do with something that was very simple, but he understood the car. So when you're blowing water out of the vents, it can be a bad heater core. It can be all kinds of stuff, but it can also be a plug to drain. So instead of a $1,700 heater core, he turns around and cleans up the drain for $150, and it doesn't blow water out of the passenger vents anymore. So that's exactly what kind of sophistication they have there, and there's a lot of gray-haired guys there. And so they've been around the block a few times. Harker's Automotive, 38th Avenue and Indian School. Bobby, you're up next.
Hey, Mark.
Yes, sir.
I had a question for you about the temperature outside in the summer. I always hear people saying that they put a heavier weight oil in. And, you know, assuming that your thermostat, your radiator, your fans are all working properly, I think I know the answer to this, but I want to hear your answer.
Okay.
Does your engine know or care how hot it is outside?
Well, there's a direct relationship to the ambient temperature outside the car and the temperature inside the engine. But let's go back to oil basics. A 10-30 oil, 10 weight, let's just picture in our mind kind of a sewing machine oil, okay? Just for purposes of radio, let's just think of sewing machine oil. And 30 weight is more of a thick chocolate milk. So a 10-30, here's what 10-30 means. It flows like a 10 weight when it's cold, and it flows like a 30 weight when it's hot. So we now know that that's okay. We want, when the engine's cold, we don't want to have peanut butter in there. We want to have sewing machine oil in your car, in your engine. When it's hotter, we'd rather have the peanut butter kind of oil. Does that make sense? So yes, people move around, but here's the problem with that. In the last 10 years, we shouldn't be moving around, and I'll tell you why. We're using a 0-20. It flows like a 0 weight when it's cold and flows like a 20 weight when it's hot. Well, gray-haired guys go, I can't put a 20 weight in my diesel. Well, that's what that diesel calls for, is the 20 weight. The 20 weight has such a wide window of protection. We all think, well, 30 weight's good, but 40's more protection, 50 weight's more protection. No, that's not true. The matter is getting the oil in between two pieces of metal that are rubbing one another, and the distance in the two pieces of metal is half the thickness of a human hair. Do I want to get peanut butter in there and try to lubricate that joint, or would sewing machine oil be better? And everybody agrees, if you're rubbing your hands together as fast as you can in front of your face, that if you wanted to lubricate your hands, peanut butter wouldn't work, sewing machine oil would work better. So you're right. The last 10 years has been kind of a tumbling about oil, but the 0-20 is the new oil, and believe it or not, we're putting that in new diesel trucks. And man, are they performing for us with fuel economy and protection in heat. But to answer your question, all the cars today run at 220. They run at 220. They're not supposed to get to 400, and when they do, they'll only do it once. It'll only make 400 degree one time. And so most, I would say 99% of the cars that we service at my shop have a 220. And if you look at your gauge, you'll see that the gauge, the 220 mark's going to be between half and three quarters on the gauge. That's where we want you. Now, just between you and me, Bobby, got a lot of old gray-haired guys come in, or they send their wives in, and they said, my car's overheating. And we say, well, where's the gauge at? Well, it's just over the half. Well, no, that's normal. It's normal. Trust us. Then there's this goalpost kind of thing on your gauge with two uprights and then a horizontal bar. That's called the normal range. Anywhere in there is fine. But if Bobby's taken his three brothers and they're driving to Flagstaff to play golf and they've got an ice chest full of diet soda pop and they've got their golf clubs, as they climb up into Flagstaff, that thing's probably going to get up to three quarters on the gauge. Nobody cares. It's okay.
Okay.
That's normal. And I'm glad you're laughing because you and I are understanding this, a lot of the jokes I'm making about your golf clubs and your beer and all that kind of stuff. But every car on the road made for the last 20 years, there is a normal range on the gauge and the temperature, and anywhere in there is just fine. But I would like you, Bobby, to say, Mark, when I go to Flagstaff to play golf with all my buddies, it does run up past the three-quarter mark. And I say, well, how far is that from the red zone? About three or four needle widths on the gauge. Oh, don't worry about it, Bobby. Just maybe dump a little bit of beer out before you leave. So stuff like that.
Let me just ask you one other thing.
Okay.
What about, you know, all these, what are these improvements that have been made in modern engines that allow for the longer maintenance interval? What has actually changed in technology, engine technology?
Oh, easy.
Internally.
First of all, we're going to start running them at 220 because we know, here's the deal. Water boils at what, Bobby?
212.
So every time you shut your car off, as the engine cools down, the vapor inside condenses, and we get five or six drops of water in your oil. The only way to get the water out of your oil is to boil it out. So we run your temperature up to 220. The water turns to a vapor. The PCV valve sucks the vapor out of the engine, sends it out the tailpipe, and we're fine. Now, we also have oil. Take your hands and put them in front of you, Bobby, and rub them together like you're praying to your wife saying, please forgive me, I forgot to pick you up at the grocery store. Rub your hands together.
I just did that, yeah.
Rub your hands together like this, fast as you can, okay? When you do that, your hands get, palms get hot, okay? Now, do you want peanut butter to get in there to help with the friction, or would you rather have water? Which would get better? Now, the distance in there is the thickness of two pieces of paper. So if we've got two pieces of metal rubbing on one another, and inside the middle is the thickness of two pieces of paper, you want peanut butter or sewing machine oil in that joint to provide lubrication? The answer is sewing machine oil. Because it's going to get in there. So that's what we're up against. We're up against all the gray-haired guys that want to put peanut butter in their car. But in reality, we now know that the hotter we run it, the better it likes it and the longer it lives. And we also know that if we put a 0-20 or a 10-20 or a thinner 20-weight oil in there, that we're going to provide protection they never had before. So that's what's the difference. We're running the engines hotter, and we're taking the peanut butter out of the engine, and we're putting sewing machine oil in there.
Well,
how'd I do?
It makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, it really has to do with just, if you fill your engine with peanut butter, it's going to work very, very hard just to swirl that peanut butter around. But if we fill your engine with water, it's going to have a whole bunch of extra horsepower. And then as far as the temperature is concerned, we change the oil every 3,000 miles for this reason. We change the oil because it was contaminated a lot with water. Because remember, we had 180, 160 degree thermostats. So back then, when you pull the oil out, it was muddy. It was brown and muddy.
I remember that.
And today?
The sludge in
the... Exactly, because there's water in the oil. And we never got the engine hot enough to turn the water in the oil to a vapor and then the PCV valve. You know what PCV valve stands for?
I used to know. I forget it.
Positive crankcase ventilation.
Yep.
So we're on one side of the motor, there's an air filter, a filter, and on the other side of the motor is the PCV valve, and I'm going to call that a vacuum cleaner, okay? Fresh air comes in on one end of the motor, and on the other end of the motor, we got the vacuum running, okay? So air comes in, and the PCV valve takes all the unburnt gasoline, all the fumes, and burns it again. So we're sucking all the fumes out of the engine and running them back through the mouth of the carburetor again. That's PCV, positive crankcase ventilation. You know what else that helped with? Oil leaks.
How so?
Because when we didn't have the PCV valve, the engine was kind of airtight, and so we would build internal pressure, which would cause oil leaks because the inside of the engine had 1 or 2 pounds of pressure. When we put the PCV valve back in there, it sucks on the engine, and we're sucking air from one side of the engine to the other. So now we don't have that internal pressure, and that's why oil leaks kind of went away after we put the PCV valves in the mid-70s, early 80s.
Yeah, I remember in the old days, every parking space had a puddle of oil.
Those were the Fords. If you should have gone to the Chevy side, Chevy side of the parking lot. Thank you for making me laugh. Thank you for laughing at my jokes. And Bobby, you and I both know I'm going to get my ass in trouble for a long time for saying something like that. But it's okay. You know what I mean? I don't care. Okay. Bobby and Mark are done with their Dog and Pony Show, 602-508-0960. We've got another hour of fun and frivolity. You're welcome to join us. All you have to do is call in, 602-508-0960. 602-508-0960. Gil, did you say something?
It's 1 minute.
I know it's 1 minute. Gil's my engineer. He takes good care of me. He uses bad words every once in a while in my head, and I'm waiting for the day he actually pushes the wrong button and uses a bad word. And then I'll have to explain to the boss why it's all my fault, which is what I do every time he makes a mistake anyway. So anyway, the lines are wide open. If you got a car question, give me a call. There's nothing out of bounds. If you need marriage advice, I'm pretty good with that. If you want to talk horses and cows, I can do that too. Horse trailers, diesels, we can do all of that kind of stuff. So anyway, 602-508-0960. Every Saturday, I'm here at the Patriot, KKNT 960, and we're here talking about cars. And you can also email me questions if you just tell me your year, make, and model, and then give me the symptoms. 602-508-0960, mark@marksalem.com.
Now, once again, here's Mark.
Well, good morning, everybody. 4 minutes after the hour of 11 o'clock, you're more than welcome to join us. We have three lines out of the five that's available, 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. Every Saturday, I'm here for 2 hours talking about car and car repair problems. I'm an ASE master. I've been working on cars since I was in high school in 1968, and I know right from wrong. I also serve as a mechanical expert for insurance companies, lawyers on both sides of each issues, as well as courts, like the judge and stuff. They'll ask me a question that says, look at this and tell me, answer this question. Is it left or is it right or is it up or is it down or what caused the engine to fail or what caused the engine to catch fire or whatever. Those are the kinds of things that I'm really pretty good at. But I'm here every Saturday at your service. And so before we take anything else, we're going to go to Chris. Chris has been waiting. Chris, how can I help you?
Hey, Mark, how you doing? Thank you for a few minutes of your time. I have a 95 GMC pickup, and yesterday I took it out for a ride, and it acted real funny where it was revving, and I had revving up and down, and I had to two-foot it gas and brake to get it home, and I'm in the car, and I can actually start it, let you hear what it sounds like if you want me to give it a try.
Well, let me just ask you some questions, okay?
Sure.
So if it's in park, is the engine surging? Is it going up and down and up and down?
When I first started, I never had to give it gas. Now I have to give it a little gas. and then yes, when it starts, it goes up and down and dies out within, you know, 10 seconds to 30 seconds.
Okay. All right. Well, it's fuel injected, and in fuel injection, we add air and fuel to make it do things. So when you talk to me about a fuel injection engine and it goes up and down, it's got an air leak somewhere. It could be a bad PCV valve. It could be the hose to the PCV valve has come apart, either inside or outside. It can be an EGR valve that's hung open because the EGR valve will create a vacuum leak and give the engine additional air that it really doesn't want. And when the computer sees the air from the PCV valve or the air, extra air from the EGR valve, then it compensates by bringing up the idle and adding more fuel. So this is all happening 300 times a second. So to be perfectly honest with you, I doubt very seriously if this is any big deal. This is going to be something some gray-haired guy is going to open the hood. He's going to stand there for 5, 10, 15 minutes, do this, do that. He's going to disable the EGR valve. He's going to check the PCV valve and the hose. He's going to look for vacuum leaks. Chances are this is likely to be one of those things that costs $50 to find it and $1 to fix it.
Okay.
I'm not quoting you the $50.
No. I understand. Because that's what I'm thinking. It runs fine normally, but this was just weird. I had air conditioning Freon done, so I guess I'll look around there. But they wouldn't have disconnected any vacuum hoses.
No, you're right, though. You're right. Now, I need you to make sure that the air conditioning is off when this is happening.
Oh, good question.
Because if it's on and the engine is surging, it's because the air condition. Now, they just put Freon in it. Now you've got the fan speed on low. You're just barely blowing air across the ice cube. So the system freezes up. Well, when it freezes up, it turns the compressor on and off. Well, when it turns the compressor on, the idle goes up. When it turns the compressor off, the idle goes down. The other way around. When it turns the compressor on, the idle goes down. When it turns it off, the idle goes up. So all of a sudden, the engine's surging. But it's because the air conditioning system is working beautifully, but Chris has it on low speed. We're building up a big ice cube in there, so the compressor is going to turn on and off to try to defrost the evaporator. So what Chris needs to do is just kick the fan speed up and roll down a window and stay off low speed, and the surging goes away. I'll bet this is related to the air conditioning work you had done, but it's easy to fix.
Okay, can I try it a quick time and with the air off and see what happens?
Sure.
Okay. Yeah, see how it starts, but then it dies?
Okay.
Now I'm giving it gas, and I take my foot off the gas, and it's idling where it should be, and then it dies.
Okay. Okay, well, and the fact that it runs means the fuel pump's fine. The fact that it runs means the spark is fine. So this is likely to be an idle air control motor or a big vacuum leak somewhere. Did you have your foot on the brake the whole time?
It's in park, into emergency brake on.
Okay, but you had to put the brake on to start it, then you took your foot off, though, right? Because you have to push.
And if I put it in the gear, it also dies out, too, if I'm not giving it gas, double-footing it.
I don't. Do you have a gray-haired guy with a garage that usually does your service?
I can't get in until August 2nd.
Oh, okay. Okay. Well, this is going to be something easy. I think it's appropriate, not on Monday morning or Friday afternoon. I have lots of guys like you. And what happens is I say to them, don't come in Monday morning or Friday afternoon, but just drop by at noontime someday and just let me look at it. Just let me listen to it. And that's all I want to do. And if it's something I can plug back in, if it's something I can fix, or if I can diagnose it, then I can get you in. But this is nothing serious.
Okay, one quick second. It did kick on the check engine light, but it's never come back on again. So I guess I'll get there and let someone look around at it.
Yeah, because the check engine light would have set a code, and the code will give us some kind of a clue as to whether it's fuel or spark. That's what will happen. But anyway, thank you, Chris. Thank you very much. Scott, you're up next.
Good morning, Mark. How are you?
I'm good. Thank you very much.
You're welcome. Hey, I got a 2000 Chevy Silverado that I think I have a blend door issue. The air is just coming right out of the center vent. I have no air coming out of the floor or the defrost on the dashboard. what my question is that I know I have three blend doors in that vehicle. How do I distinguish what blend door is bad or not? How can I identify that?
I don't know how come you have three, but...
One is for heat, the hot and cold, because I replaced all three of them. And the reason why I replaced all three was I had specific symptoms to each one. One was the heat and cold. The other one made noise because of that little plastic gear. You can hear it clicking. So in this situation that I'm in, I have no noise, no nothing. I do have the hot and cold. That's so I can eliminate that one, that particular blend door. Or actuator, I should say.
Yeah. Yeah, well, we have to call them kind of what they are. The blend door is the difference between hot and cold. And
okay.
then you should have one other door that's going to go between defrost and floor. And then you've got one other door for inside and outside air.
Okay.
And so those are the kinds of doors that you have. But to be honest with you, that's probably a half an hour to track down where that problem is, maybe a half an hour to an hour if somebody had all their... somebody was well familiar with the air conditioning controls on your Silverado.
Could it be a fuse, maybe?
No.
No, okay.
No, if it was a fuse, you'd be stuck in one mode.
Yeah. Well, I am in one mode. It just comes out the center vent.
Okay, so you can't redirect it from top to from defrost center vent to floor. You can't do that.
That's correct, yeah.
Okay. Well, that would be the door that I'd be working on because there is a door there that's a two-position door that gives you one or two or three, top, middle, and bottom.
Right, so, right.
Sometimes if you just take a rubber mallet or your fist, turn it on, ask it for floor heat, turn on the heater, ask it for floor, you know it's coming out of the center vents, and then just kind of tap stuff underneath the dash from the center of the dash to the right side to the passenger side. And if you've already been in there, you know where these actuators are at.
And
so
they're
just,
not easy, trust me.
Well, and just start tapping in that area. All of a sudden, it all starts working. You wouldn't believe what we find inside there. We find tacos. We find bubble gum. We find paper clips. Anything that you put on the dash that can go to the back of the dash, we find. So it's not uncommon for somebody to fix something by just jarring the activator because the door's got a piece of bubble gum on it or something.
Okay, so. I got you. So there's no way to identify each one, what they do. It's just basically do what you just said. It's just...
You can by where the schematic will show you which door does what. So the one hot and cold is going to be at the back of the glove box. And the one that goes defrost center and down will probably be in the center of the dashboard. And then outside and inside air is typically going to be over on the passenger side where we have the outside air or the inside air door.
I got you.
So,
okay.
Okay-doke.
Thank you, sir.
All right,
appreciate your time.
All righty. Thank you, Scott. 602-508-0960. 602-508-0960. And we have another caller. Who might that be, Gil?
Say hello to Sam.
Sam, good morning.
Hi, good morning. How are you?
I'm good.
Good. Got a couple of questions. One is about Dexos One oil. I've got a 2016 Chevy
2 minutes.
Equinox, and I think they just put in the synthetic blend, but I'm not sure because it just says Dexos on the little sticker. This was the dealer. Anyway, they want me back every 5,000 miles, and I have a container of full synthetic that I want to put in and change the oil myself, which I know that'll go, 8,000 to 12,000?
Yes, 10, at least north of 10.
Okay, and my question is, in the book it also says if the system is ever reset accidentally, the oil must be changed at 3,000 miles. So it's kind of like what you're talking about. This is not conventional oil. This is a synthetic blend or a full synthetic. So I know it'll go 5,000 to 7 or 8,000 or 8,000 to 12,000, depending on if it's the full synthetic or semi-synthetic.
Yeah. You keep saying Dexos, and Dexos is just the General Motors name for their oil. It's no different than Valvoline or Castrol or Chevron or any of the rest of them. They have this proprietary name, and sometimes I hear stories about that you have to use Dexos or your warranty's void, and frankly, there's nothing could be further from the truth. You're allowed to change your oil and improve your fuel economy. You're allowed to change your oil. Stay within some kind of parameters of what you're doing, but if you're going to go from a semi-synthetic to a synthetic, then you can certainly go to an 8 to a 12,000-mile oil change. Here's what I'm telling you. How many miles a year do you drive?
Oh, probably less than 10,000.
Okay, then I'd use a synthetic oil, and I'd change it every April. That's what I would do if I were you. Because you're going to go through the summer with fresh oil by changing it in April. You're going to change it April every year, and synthetic will certainly carry you 10,000 miles. And if you go to 11 or 12, it'll handle that too. So that's what I would do.
It'll be okay with a full synthetic.
Yeah. Yeah. Now, if you're going to use a semi-synthetic, then you're going to basically, you can change it every 6 months if you want, or every 8 months if you want, because a semi-synthetic is 8,000 plus or minus. So if you say, well, I'm going to go 5,000-mile intervals, then that's fine. It's better than 3,000 for a conventional. Okie doke?
Okay. All right. And the other question was, I've got a bolt on a fender that's underneath, and the bolt just spins around like the nut just is loose, but the whole thing is covered. All I can see is the bolt or sheet metal on the front, the side, everything. How would I get that out? Do I have to cut sheet metal away in order to get to that? Get a wrench on it?
Well, us old guys know how to do that. I think you just, hopefully your garage has, you know, one of the seasoned veterans there, or, you know, somebody who's been in the business for 10 or 15 or 20 or 30 or 40 or 50 years. But that isn't really hard to do. It's just a matter of taking everything apart and blowing it all the junk out of it, taking the bolt out and seeing what's going on. What happens if the threads on the bolt are just stripped? Why not just take the bolt out and then put a new one in? But it's also...
No. I'm saying that the bolt just spins when I try to back it out. It just spins. I can't get a wrench on the back side of it to hold
All right. Well, if the nut was spot welded to the back side of the fender, and you're supposed to bring the bolt from down low and go straight north into the hole, and now we've broke that spot weld, then, yeah, somebody's going to have to take it apart to get that apart. But it's not that big of a deal. So it's just not that big of a deal. A body shop would probably, I'm quite sure the body shops around you, the guys that have been around a while, are seasoned enough to know exactly how to handle that. I got to run. 602-508-0960. The lines are wide open. We'll be right back. Well, it's 21 minutes after the hour of 11 o'clock. Every Saturday from 10 to 12, we're here talking about cars. You're always welcome to join us. My email address is Mark, with a K, mark@marksalem.com. I have a bunch of nice, clean 55-gallon drums that have already been cleaned out. They no longer take those and charge you a deposit. So I have some Chevron drums that are blue, and then I have some black drums, and I also can cut the lids off and put handles on them. So if you're interested in me making a drum into a trash can for you, then just send me an email, mark@marksalem.com, mark@marksalem.com. Also, we have a Jayco for sale. It's a 2012 Jayco J-Feather Ultralight 27-foot bumper pull. 27-foot bumper pull. Air conditioning, and my wife makes me say this. This, I just spent a week or more of my time going through this trailer bumper to bumper from the hitch to the taillights and fixed everything and made a whole lot of things better. So, and I think the asking price on this thing is $14,000. So a 27-foot ultralight J-Feather 2012 Jayco. Got air conditioning, got a microwave, it's got a bathroom and a shower, and it's got a bed and then a fold-out couch, and it's a side entry, and it's got an awning. But it's Mark Salem It's Mark Salem Perfect. There you go. Anyway, let's go to the phone before we get really big in trouble. And hang on a minute. Don't tell me. Michael, you're up next, buddy.
Good morning, Mark. In all my years of listening to you, I've never heard anybody go out to the car with their cell phone and demonstrate. I thought that was really neat.
You know, I did, too. I even marked it on my log because, honest, you're exactly right. One time I had a guy go out there and make the noise. This was 20 years ago. And he would make the noise, and I said, I think your fan's hitting the shroud. No, that's not it. Well, I said, I mean, I can hear it, but so anyway, he called me the next day, and he goes, yeah, the motor mount was broken, and the fan was hitting the shroud. But that was kind of cool. I agree with you. All right, I'm all ears.
Thank you. I have a 2000 Buick Century, one of those gold ones with 132,000 miles on it.
Okay.
And my speedometer light is on, but recently the odometer light went out, digital odometer light. I was wondering how to fix that.
That's probably got some kind of a printed circuit board at the back of it. And, well, it was at a 2000, you said?
Yes.
Okay. It's probably got a printed circuit board in the back, and typically we just pull the instrument panel out and just kind of flip it over backwards, and then there's these little sockets that go in, and we just replace the bulbs. One of the things I want you to do before you do that is I want you to get it at nighttime and get it to where it's acting up. And then I want you to take your fist and I want you to hit the dashboard straight in front of you and then hit it to the right and to the left and hit it not hard enough to break anything, not hard enough to crack the dash pad, but just jar it at the same time you're looking at the lights. And oftentimes what will happen is you'll get flickering, which means that's good just because we just have to take the socket out, put a little dielectric on it, and put it back in with a new light bulb.
New light bulb.
Yeah. The odds are 98-1 that this, if you're losing illumination at your dash panel, that it's a bulb. And all I'm saying is it would be nice to know it was just a bad connection and the bulb is fine if you just kind of beat on the dash without harming the dash to see if that changes things.
A few years ago I got the car back and a fellow had working on it and the fuel gauge didn't work. How can I fix that?
Well, the first thing you want to do is go back to the tank and make sure that it's the sending unit is fine and the sending unit isn't causing the gauge to look bad. But it's the same thing. Dashboard work is dashboard work. It's not that hard. Most people think that it's very difficult, but on a 1 to 10 scale in the world that I live in, it's really a 6 or a 7. It's not a 9 or a 10. All right?
Thank you very much.
Okay, you bet. 602-508-0960. The lines are wide open. You have a chance if you'd like to call us. We have another 30 minutes of the show. So if you have a car question, I'm especially good when the question goes, this is the kind of car we have, and my wife says this, and I say this. And I'm really good at those kinds of questions. I was a marriage counselor in my former years, and and my wife would never admit to that, but it's okay. Anyway, so if you have a question like that, I can help you. The thing that I hope that you take from the show is, as with every profession in the whole wide world, there's going to be people that disagree. They disagree about what oil is best for your car, what tires are the best tires to buy for your car, how often you should flush your cooling system and all that kind of stuff. But let me share with you this. What's happening now is that we used to see you 3 and 4 and 5 times a year because you had a 3,000-mile oil change. So we got to look at your car and we got to sell you tire rotations and brake jobs and hoses and belts and fix oil leaks. Today you come in once a year. So all of a sudden, there's many in our industry that have come up with this proprietary, their own, 20, 30, or 40-point inspection. You get that for free when you come in for your oil change. What that is just an inspection to go through your car with a fine-tooth comb, look at what you've got, and then to sell you stuff. But I just want to remind you before you okay those kinds of bills is to ask them to compare their suggestions to the owner's manual.
2 minutes.
Some people will want to change your transmission fluid on an annual basis when in reality the transmission fluid in your car may go 100,000 miles, 70,000 miles, 80,000 miles. You can see that it's pretty self-serving for us to start telling you to change the oil change interval in your transmission because we said you live in Phoenix when in reality they knew when they built the car it was going to end up in Arizona. So those are kind of self-serving things. Always match the recommendation from your shop, mine included, the recommendation from your shop with respect to the owner's manual. So those are the kinds of things that that change it. One of the other things is not only oil changes, but we used to be able to do a lot of fluids every 30, 60, 90, and today everything's 100,000 miles. We've lost all that work. So it's a little bit more expensive at 100,000 miles, but it doesn't represent the the sales if we did it three times. So those are the kinds of issues that you're gonna run across. And just say to them, let's open up my owner's manual and show me where it says that I'm due for that, please. That's a great thing to ask. And, of course, if they start with a bunch of double talk and it sounds like your 18-year-old son when he comes home 2 hours late on his first date with dad's pickup truck, then you've already been there, done that. You understand that kind of talk and that kind of rap. So the idea is that your owner's manual still speaks to your car, and there's a whole lot of reasons why we should. You'll find out there's a whole lot of reasons why we should cut that interval in half, but nobody wants to extend it, and that should bother you. 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. 33 minutes after the hour of 11 o'clock. My name is Mark Salem. I'm here every Saturday from 10 to 12 talking about car repair problem, car repair questions, concerns. What do I do about this? What should I say about that? My wife and I disagree on this. All that kind of stuff we can handle. 602-508-0960. 602-508-0960. There's a shop up in the northeast quadrant of the valley, 40th Street at Greenway, called Blackwell Automotive, and I've known Tom for more than 20 years. He works on vintage cars as well as newer model cars as well as motorhomes. He is like a lot of the rest of us. We can work on your lawnmower, your John Deere riding lawnmower, all the way up to your motorhome. It's just fundamentals. They all have brakes. They all have tires. They all have fluids. And I know Tom's really good at motorhomes because he's owned a few. So have I. And doing, you know, figuring out why your refrigerator's not working or, you know, why your generator won't start is something that on a 1 to 10 scale is not even a 2 or a 3. So Blackwell's good. He's at 40th Street and Greenway. Now, if you're a diesel guy, the very best diesel guy in town is Nate at Strictly Diesel. He's up on Pinnacle Peak and I-17. I've known Nate for so many years, but he is even my go-to guy with respect to diesel issues. So if you have a Chevy, a Ford, a Dodge, and you've got a diesel and you've got a problem no one else can fix, then Nate certainly would be somebody that you would want to talk to, and that's Nate at Strictly Diesel. Let me tell you a story real quick, and the lines are open if you want to give us a call. 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. There was a Ford truck that had a problem that intermittently it would just die and wouldn't start for some period of time. They'd come back an hour later to the next day and it would start and run just fine. What ultimately happened was is that you have to put a specific additive in, or you don't have to, but a lot of diesel people put a specific additive in their diesel fuel. Well, they found out that there's this little piece of cardboard about the size of a 50-cent piece. Now, the mouth of the fuel pump in the fuel tank sits down very close to the bottom of the tank. It's spaced off there about a quarter of an inch. So this truck had, I don't know how many pairs of eyes on it. I don't know how many people looked at this. I don't know how many people guessed on the repair, but I can tell you that there was a lot of repairs that were not done just once or twice or three times. There was just, filters were replaced, pumps were replaced again and again and again and again, and fuel pressure regulators were replaced, computers were replaced, software was complete. One person figured out that when you put this additive into the fuel tank, you're supposed to take this little piece of cardboard and throw it away, which opens the container. But what people would do is they would push it into the tank. Then when they poured it into the fuel tank, that piece of cardboard got in there. Well, what are the odds that this thing's swimming around inside? We have this suction port on the very bottom of the fuel tank where we're sucking fuel and shoving it forward to the engine. and this little silver dollar piece of cardboard would fit perfectly and block that hole. And then if you just sat there and you tried to start it, it would just suck it up and block the hole more. So it was just, and then by the time somebody put it on a tow truck and sloshed the fuel around in it and take it to a shop, it would start and run every time. And so nobody could figure it out. But they had replaced so many components two or three times, it was everybody was scared to death of this truck, and some one guy decided, I'm actually going to look inside the fuel tank, and he found this little piece of cardboard. What was really strange about the whole thing was after they knew what to query on the internet, there was an old guy in Tennessee who had posted that on this faraway website about he had found the same thing. But nobody knew what the search words were. Nobody knew what the query was. Nobody knew what was going on other than the fact that this thing would just die and not restart. And then you'd tow it to a shop and it would always start. So it was kind of an interesting kind of thing. But those are the hard ones. But there's a lot of shops in this valley that can fix the easy ones and the hard ones. So if you want a list of the best shops, according to me, Mark Salem, then go to marksalem.com. This list of shops started in 1988. It was here long before all these other referral networks were yakking and talking. Because that was the number one question when I first got on the radio in 1988 at another station here in Phoenix. The number one question is, where's your shop? And my mother, who was an executive, said, you sound like crazy. You sound bad because you're always talking about your shop. And I said, so what should I do? And she says, you should send them to the shop closest to them that you can refer them to. And that's what happened. That's how the best car repair shops got started, is because my mother said, I don't think you sound good by sending everybody to Tempe to your shop. I think you've got enough friends in this valley that you could refer these people to and be their hero, as opposed to you sounding like that you're the only shop in town that can fix anything. That still goes today. My mom died in 2005, but that's still today. Today, there's lots of shops, and all you have to do is go to marksalem.com and look at it. Here's my promise to you. If you have a problem with one of the shops and they don't perform and the process of dispute resolution comes to the conclusion that the shop should have done something, then if the shop is supposed to pay you for something and they don't, I will up to $5,000. So if the shop is told that they have to make a refund of $312 to you and the shop doesn't, I will. Here's the problem with that. I've never done that with the list I have today. Never. So these guys are good, and they know what right and wrong is, and they're going to know how to fix your car. So mark@marksalem.com is my email address, but my website is marksalem.com, and we'll be right back. So it's 43 minutes after the hour of 11 o'clock. We're about 16, 17 minutes away from the end of the show. If you'd like to call us, you can. I can get you in. 602-508-0960. 602-508-0960. There's two shops in town that are actually on the opposite side of the valley. Action Auto Repairs up at I-17 in Deer Valley. I've known Tom since 1983. He knows right from wrong. He buys good parts. He hires good technicians. He keeps his words to them. They keep their words to you. And he's been around a long time. So if you're near I-17 in Deer Valley, you don't have a repair shop, on the northwest corner of the I-17 in Deer Valley is Action Auto Repair. And he's been serving the Deer Valley and North Phoenix area since 1983. Way far west in Sun City, the best shop as far as I'm concerned is Auto Dynamics. Their staff and their mechanics are not paid a commission, and there's no motivation for them to pad your bill. Just get the car fixed. Figure out what their symptoms are. Diagnose it right. Bid it right. Fix it right. And then make sure that the repairs fix the problem before you ship the car back to the customer. So it's family-owned and operated since 1982. I've known Chuck Knight and the family since the late 70s. So it's a relationship that goes back a long way. So if you're in Sun City, Auto Dynamics, the north side of Grand, just west of 99th Avenue. So Auto Dynamics, 99th and Grand, is the only place I can recommend. When it comes to car repair, the real problem has to do... Let me just talk to the women here for a minute. The real problem, when there's a problem, and it could be any time 10% upwards to 40 or 50 or 60%. It's oftentimes that the man in your life has told you what to tell us. And that's always a bad idea. What we'd really like is for you to show us and just show us what you want us to do. Show us the symptom. Take us for a ride. Insist that you assign a technician or a manager to come with me. I'm going to show him how to make it happen. And then I'm going to switch with him and teach him how to make it happen. And I'll have him back here in 15 or 20 minutes. I'm not going to have him for 2 hours while I drive around trying to make it happen. Because that drives us crazy. We can't let a technician go with somebody while they, you know, try to figure out how to make it happen. Hopefully you can make it happen. But if not, the next best thing is to write it down and tape it to the rearview mirror. Mr. Technician, I'm sorry you were... My car was dispatched to you, but my name is Mark, and here's my cell phone number. Here's what I'm hoping you can fix. When I start my car, da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da. Those notes taped to the rearview mirror, you have no idea how we embrace those notes, because that's the communication. The worst part is the wife's bringing the husband's car in, and he told her what to say, or vice versa. We really just need to talk with the person who's got the problem. A lot of times the question, when they come back with an estimate, your self-defense for car expense mechanism is just write it down, write down what I need, put a price to it, and tell me what symptom you're going to fix with this repair. That's a reasonable thing to ask. Otherwise, I'm talking about an oil leak, and I want you to fix an oil leak. And so you went in and put, and I'm using stupid examples here. You went in and did a PCV valve and an engine flush, and you also flushed my injectors, but I still have the oil leak. And I don't know how they're related, but you said you were going to fix my oil leak for X amount of dollars, but the work order says you flushed my injectors and you flushed my engine. So those are the kinds of things that we should have a conversation. In my opinion, the easiest customers to deal with are the ladies, because basically they're not going to tell us how many years of experience they've had working on cars. They're not going to tell us how many times they had farm tractors, they drove them when they were 10. They're basically going to answer our questions and give us the symptoms, which is what we want. What are we trying to fix? In the morning, it won't start. Okay, good. Does it go rrr, 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 and it doesn't catch and run? Or does it not go rrr, 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 rrr? It does not go rrr, rrr, rrr. Okay, that's a no crank. So when you hit the key, does it click and then there is no cranking? Yes. Bingo. We are making progress. So what I have here is I don't have any noise. So as opposed to this, Mrs. Salem, you put the key in, you hit the key, there's a loud click, but nothing moves in the engine. There is no da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da, that kind of thing. Yes, that's correct, Mark. Ooh, boy, we are making progress. That's the kind of conversation that should happen at the front counter of the auto repair shop, is asking questions and asking, and there's three answers for you. Yes, no, or I don't know. And don't be afraid to use any one of those three. If you don't know, say you don't know. But the win is if you'll take the time and insist that someone take a ride with you, because you can guarantee them you can duplicate the problem in front of the person that's with you. But don't do it if it only happens on Wednesdays at noon and your appointment is for Tuesday. Don't do that. That drives shop owners crazy, because we've got a technician that's, you know, working at $110 to $130 an hour in labor, and you've got him for 45 minutes while you drive around trying to get the trunk lid to squeak. So that's kind of a difficult thing for us to deal with. Nevertheless, you're likely to get that kind of activity and that kind of service from an independent repair shop. But don't be afraid to go in and type the name of the shop in. ABC Auto Repair Reviews. That's all you have to do. You could do it on my shop. Salem Boys Auto Reviews. It's okay. We're not going to be able to please everybody. I think most people understand, and I certainly do. I can read about a washing machine mechanic, a guy that does door-to-door stuff, and I can tell it doesn't take me long to figure out that we had he really screwed up, or that the customer was unreasonable, or the both of them are at fault, or neither one of them is at fault. It's okay. Reviews are just reviews. We've all had good ones and we've all had bad ones, and you got to live with them because they don't let you take them and erase the bad ones. We've got a caller, and who might that be?
Say hello to Scott.
Scott, good morning. How can I help you?
Mark, good morning. How are you?
I'm good. Thank you for asking. Thank you.
Mark, I'm the fellow that we've talked a few times. I'm the guy that does the helicopter part.
Yes, yes.
And I listen, and I like all of your – well, I'm going to say, as the self-appointed oil expert that you are, which I like that crown, is your discussions on oil make a lot of sense to me, and I'm not trying to give you any guff. I think it's the way you explain it's very well done. My question is, when in turbine-powered helicopter engines, one of the most important features is the pump and the scavenge pump for the oil system. And that's fundamentally because the oil, besides providing lubrication, at least, we're told, at least 50% of its function is for cooling. And I've never heard you discuss that in an automotive application. Is it applicable, or have you ever had those type of studies or discussions?
Nope. You couldn't be more right about a bunch of things. Number one, at cooling, it's capturing and carrying the heat away, is another way to put it. So we're going to use the oil to transfer the heat back to the sump, and we're going to run it through an oil cooler and return it to the engine. You're right. The problem is as you can imagine, and because you're as technical as I am on helicopters as cars, I have to use words that make sense to people. I have to draw pictures with my mouth. But the oil is to provide lubrication and minimize the wear between two rubbing components, and it's also supposed to carry the heat away from that joint. So it's to go in there, absorb the heat, provide lubrication, and get the hell out. Then it goes to the filter and drops off its trash, and then it goes through the cooler, which cools it back off and sends it back, so it's a big loop. But there is so much, Scott, if you've listened before, and I know you have, there's so much old wives' tales about 30 weight and 50 weight and 90 weight. Let me ask you, in your helicopter gearboxes and engines and stuff, do you guys use synthetics? Is there a weight, or is it just a hydraulic oil?
Oh, it's just a turbine oil, Mark. It's closer to the sewing machine oil that you describe. And really what I was wondering is if you've ever heard a percentage of we get 80% lubrication and 20% cooling or something like that.
I would have said that.
The example in the helicopter is when we shut the engine down, now we've got all this huge heat in the turbine area. So what we have to do is stop the oil from going there, and the scavenge pump, its value then is to make sure it pulls the oil away from that area. Otherwise, it'll sit in there and cook and actually turn into carbon.
And your turbine is driven by the exhaust, right, which is already hot, yes?
Well, the application I'm giving you is what's called a free turbine. You have an N1 and an N2 section.
Okay.
So that's lesson 102. But it's basically, you're driving hot air through stators that turn turbine wheels, that turn gearboxes, that drive the rotor system.
Okay. I understand the scavenge pump. In car engines, you're right. It's actually, it provides virtually 100% of the lubrication, but it's going to be handling at least 20% of the heat. There are times that we can change the oil from a peanut butter oil, and we have done this before in testing, where we've taken the peanut butter out and putting in a synthetic, a 0-20 or something, and we can knock 20 or 30 degrees off the cooling system. And it's
so, hey Mark, here's a question for you then. So let's use a turbocharger as an application in the automotive business. You know, I've heard you discuss with some of your callers, you could let it cool down a little bit if you've really, you know, been driving it hard. Does turbocharged engines have scavenger pumps, or do they just hope that the oil cools down enough in the turbocharger when the engine shut down.
Okay. Okay. Good. 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 This is going to be technical, but I understand. When we shut off the turbocharger, the biggest problem we have is the oil stays there. Well, we have to make sure that it doesn't coke and turn to a solid. That's why synthetics, they don't burn and turn to a solid till 500 degrees north of that. So there's a lot of old guys that will sit there until their EGTs, their exhaust gas temperature on their turbochargers, cools off below 300, then they shut it off, and they know that whatever oil's left in the turbocharger in a gasoline or diesel application is going to be okay. Well, today we've got these oils that will go 500 degrees, and they won't turn to a solid. So we're not real concerned about that, but no, we're not going to pull the oil out of the turbocharger. When you shut the key off, the last squirt's in, and the other way it pushed one out,
okay,
and we're done. But in your case, you're pulling that oil out so it doesn't turn from a liquid to a solid and cause a problem. Am I right?
Yes, because we're way north of the temperatures you're outlining.
Okay, and that's interesting. And you said something else too. I can't remember what the heck it was, but I had a guy change some fluid, and I said, "What did you put in there?" And he goes, "Oh, I know what it was. He was in the windmill." The guy goes, "I said, what are you going to do?" And he goes, "I'm going to change the oil in the windmill." And I go, "Well, what kind of oil do you use in there?" Because I'm thinking I can probably do it myself. And he says, "Oh, it's just some hydraulic oil." And I said, "Okay." So he crawls up, and he's got this big boom truck, and he tips the thing over, and he drains the oil, and he puts new oil in. Well, the container that he puts the new oil in doesn't have any markings on it, so I don't know what it is. But I was smart enough to get a sample of it. So I got a sample of the old stuff, so I'm going to send it to the lab and say, "What is this?" Because that's what... Now, it doesn't have an oil filter. There's nothing but gear lubrication necessary. This windmill's never going to get hot. So I know that I could use a 020 synthetic in this windmill and just be fine. I just got to find out if there's going to be any seals that I need to be concerned with and to make sure that I have something that keeps them pliable. But I'm still waiting for the helicopter ride to the Grand Canyon. You said I could fly
one
it.
1 minute.
And you said I would only have to pay for fuel, and I'm willing to do that. So thank you for calling in.
Thank you very much. Anytime, sir.
Okay.
It's always good talking to you, Mark.
Thank you, Scott. Thank you. All righty. So my email address again is mark@marksalem.com. Salem like the cigarette. Mark with a K at marksalem.com. Actually, Scott builds parts for helicopters, and him and I have these kinds of spirited discussions a lot where we're trying to just compare. We're not fencing with one another. We both have specific engineering needs. We have specific needs with heat dissipation and lubrication, and we're just kind of comparing the helicopters to the cars and what one does that the other doesn't. My email address is mark@marksalem.com. Thank you for spending your Saturday with me. Every Saturday I'm here from 10 to 12 here on KKNT 960, and we're talking about cars. But you can also send me an email, and if you'll give me your phone number, a lot of times I'll just call you back.